Today's daf in Masechet Nedarim, brought to you Me'eretz HaKodesh, is daf Lamed Aleph. So we're holding at, right at the top of the daf, Lamed Aleph, in the Mishnah. Halakha Mishnah. Hanoder Mishofte Shabbat, Asur B'Yisrael, V'Asur B'Kutim. So now we're continuing on with the way that people will generally use words, even though technically they may not mean what they say. And yet we find that there's a curious interrelationship between what the words mean in a systematic way and the way that people will use them. So it's not as if people are completely unaware and make no sense out of the utilizations that they have. So let's say a guy who speaks about, I don't want to be nene from people who are shoftei Shabbat. So what does he mean? He's asur b'Yisrael, and he's asur b'kutim, because these are people who are shoftei Shabbat. We think, okay, we're going to see in the Gemara what this means. What if he says, I am asur to be nene from anyone who eats garlic? So now nowadays, we know what that would mean, that he's got a big supply of toothpaste. But this is not the issue at the time of the Gemara. The reference to eating garlic was also essentially to Shoftei Shabbat, because people would eat garlic, as the Gemara says, is a mitzvah to eat garlic on Erev Shabbos because of the fact that it helps production of semen. And since the Leil Shabbos is the time for Tamei Chachomim to be intimate with their wives, so there was a minhag to eat garlic. So it turns out the Kusim also eat garlic. Fine. So he's also in Kutim. How about if he says, I am also from anybody who goes up to Yerushalayim, which means he's Oilo the Yerushalayim for Rekel? So then he's also be Yisrael and Mutar Bekutim. So now we want to understand what exactly are we basing this use of language on. I mean, if you're talking about Shoftei Shabbat, so maybe that means that it would include Moshe Forman's neighbors, the Seventh-day Adventists. You know, they got a big shop over there. They claim to be Shoftei Shabbat, so that should be also included, right? So, I mean, Elim Mimikaimei Shabbat means people that are going to rest on Shabbat. So why does it say that the Kutim? I mean, there's lots of Goyim that claim to be Shoftei Shabbat. So why aren't they included? So therefore, it must mean that he is referring to people that have a mitzvah for keeping Shabbat. But that can't be either, because if the words are defined as anyone who has that mitzvah, then what do you do with the Sefer? The Sefer says, Me'olei Yerushalayim. So then he's Osir B'Yisrael Mutar B'Kutim. I mean, if we're looking at Kutim as essentially being Chayav in mitzvot, they just don't keep the mitzvot because, you know, they go to Har Gerizim instead. So then why would it not include Kutim? Why is he Mutar for Kutim? Aren't they mitzuvim? Rabbi, what he means is people that are mitzuveh and they actually do it. So, in other words, those that are doing it, not just because it's something that they believe in, but because they do it as part of what they're chayav to do. That's what I'm referring to. And so, betarte bavekamaita, in the first two bavot, where we're talking about shoftei Shabbat or ochle shum, Yisrael vekutim, are both mitzuvim and osim. Of the Kochavim, Ahudi Avde, so there may be of the Kochavim, but the ones who are keeping Shabbat, they may be keeping it, but there ain't a Mitzuvim. And when it comes to Olei Yerushalayim, Yisrael are both Mitzuvim Vosim, and Kutim are Mitzuvim Veinam Osim, and therefore they're excluded. So what that means is that it's a mistake to only look at colloquialisms. The idea is to look at the basis of the colloquialism and also what would be the most reasonable structure of the colloquialism. Because, I mean, you can't, if we're really just going to look at what do you think people mean, as opposed to, well, how do we decide what it is that people would really mean? Then there would be no sense to this Mishnah at all, you see. The Mishnah is trying to interrelate that there could be sets of meaning. And that what the person is trying to do is he's using a strange definition, because that's, I mean, if he really means he doesn't want to be netted to Jews, let him just say, I don't want to be netted to Jews. I mean, so what is he saying, Shoftei Shabbat? So we need to analyze what the strict definition is in terms of his usage. And now it's time for a word from Sir Richard. Richie's going to give us trouble today because he doesn't have Doc on top of him. So this is, I don't know, let's see what he does when he's all on his own. This is the moment of truth. Konam she'eni ne'ene livnei Noach. How about if a person asers b'nei Noach on himself? So, I mean, technically speaking, all of the Jews are b'nei Noach, or they wouldn't be here. Nonetheless, he's mutar b'Yisrael, and he's aser b'avdei kochavim. Well, why is that, asked the Gemara? I mean, aren't Yisrael actually b'nei Noach? Yes, but the point is that they're not known as b'nei Noach. And again, now you would think, okay, so that means they're not colloquially known as b'nei Noach. No, this is very fascinating, because we're going to be looking at the conceptual issue over here, because given the Ikedesh Avraham, Itkarya al Shmi. Now that you could say, once Avraham was Mekudesh and HaKadosh Baruch Hu chose him and so on, so then nobody refers to them as B'nai Noach. So again, it may not be technically the Iskadesh, but now we'll take a look at the next piece of the Mishnah, and we'll see that it's actually more complex than that, Sir Richard. Sir Richard. Sir Richard, Sir Richard, boy, oh, boy, that was a fast snooze. Let me tell you,
that was a fast Mishnah.
Now you thought you'd be able to pack in another bowl of cereal, right? Ha
ha. Well,
go ahead.
You got me.
Okay. Thank you. So here's where it gets more complicated, because what if the guy says, Koinem, that I'm not going to be nene to any children of Abraham. Now, this is very serious, because this could destroy the Mondial, and I mean, this is geopolitically a hot potato, this Mishnah, which is why most of the Gersos cut it out today in the digital versions. But he says, forget about Abraham Accords. I don't want to be nene from any children of Abraham. Now, I mean, so you think that means you got to leave Qatar, right? Aha. But you don't, you see. He's usher b'Yisrael umutter b'avdei kochavim. Now, here we're going to see that actually it's based, the colloquialism is based on a real structure of how it is that these names come about. So it isn't just a question of looking at, like, okay, what do you think the guy means? Because the Gemara says, what about Qatar? I mean, Aika Yishmael, aren't they B'nai Avraham? And what about all these guys that signed these Abraham Accords? Isn't that considered to be B'nai Avraham? No, says the Gemara, because it says, Ki bi Yitzchak yikare lecha zera. So that means the Zera of Avraham Avinu is to be found in Yitzchak and only in Yitzchak. And therefore, it will not include any of Yishmael. Well, what about Esav? Esav is Yitzchak. Doesn't he have both of us, Avram and Yitzchak? Ah, it says, Ki bi Yitzchak, some of Yitzchak, v'lo ko Yitzchak. Now, again, I mean, what does this mean? That the person who's saying the neder, he has the kavaner for the diuk of Ki bi Yitzchak yikare lecha zera. So in other words, the point is that we look in certain issues that have a meaning that extends across the way people perceive things, that those are things that we need to look at the Shoresh. And indeed, the Torah goes out in a Tzurah Shorshit. It looks to defining what is meant by Zera Avraham. And in doing so, it actually defines the way that people use the term. Even though, and we're going to see this on the continuing Mishnayos, even though it does not seem to have a basis just in the colloquialism, We want to see how that came about. So things are more complex than we thought. Let's take a look at the next stage of this, okay? Somebody says, we need to wait for the next stage, but since we're talking about the idea of Nana from Yisrael, let's see what happens if somebody indeed does say straight up, She'eini Nana miYisrael. And here we've got Richie ready. He didn't want to be cut out over here flat.
Ah.
Now, this is also very topical because, I mean, when they started making problems with the employees in the Apple factory yesterday in China, they simply arrested them and beat them up. So, you know, it's all very nice to start talking about organizing, Richie, but it's dangerous in today's political climate. I wouldn't complain about overwork. So if somebody says, She'eini Ne'enemi Yisrael, so what does he do? He's not allowed to have any hanov from Jews. So can he actually conduct business dealings with them? I mean, he does get hanov. He manages to sell things, right? Well, yes, he would have to sell by underpricing it. Now, that way, he's not being nenet, because he could have gotten more money if he sold it to goyim. So if he's selling to Jews for cheap, he's not being nenet. And if he wants to buy, he's going to have to pay more than he would pay at Walmart. So that means if he's going to be going into a Jewish store, he wants to buy from a Jewish store, he says he's not going to be nenet from Yisrael. Now, mind you, obviously he did not say he's not going to be nenet from anything of Yisrael. He means from Jews. Because if he asked enough of, then that means that anything that was owned by a Jewish person, it doesn't matter how much it's being sold for, even if he's paying triple the price, he's not allowed to be netted from it because the netter was chal on the chayfetz. But over here, the netter is chal on the individual that he's being netted from. And the other way around, if he says, I don't want Jews to get any benefits out of me, so then he would have to actually not pay full price. If he wants to buy from the Jew, he's going to have to buy at a lower price than they would sell normally, below market price. And that way, he's not going to be giving them any hana'ah because they could get a better deal elsewhere. And if he wants to sell, he's going to have to overcharge them. I mean, if he can get idiots to support him, you know, I would imagine, says the Mishnah, Ein Shomim Lo. I don't think anybody's going to listen to him to do this. Or the Ron suggests maybe just say Ishomimlo if you can get anybody. But you know these Jews, they'll always go out of their way to save a guy who puts himself into trouble. So maybe, you never know. Now, how about if he says, I won't be nene from them and they're not allowed to be nene from me? So then he's only allowed to be nene from Ovdei Kochavim. Now, that's pretty obvious. But the point is, as the Ron says, that you might have thought that this netter is not a serious netter. There's somebody get along without being able to be netter from everybody, and nobody's allowed to be netter from him. So it would be like one of those nadarim that is impossible to do. Let's the guy, he puts himself in a position where he's not going to sleep for the next 3 days or whatever. The same kind of thing that we had by Shvua Shav. We talked about the idea of the equivalent concept of a netter Shav. But anyway, you would have thought so. Kamashma, since it is technically possible to get along that way, so therefore, we're telling you that the netter is chal. Omer Shmuel. Now, this begins with something that doesn't seem to be directly related. We'll see how it's related. And what the Gemara is trying to do over here is to actually establish, because this isn't so clear, is it? I mean, we're saying that, what, if you sell to someone at market value, so you're doing them a favor? That's what it's saying. It's saying you aser them being nene from you. So then what's the big favor in selling to them? And if it is a big favor, so then why is buying from them a favor at market value? I mean, so then that's not a favor. Then you're doing the favor for yourself. And there seems to be some kind of problem with how the Mishnah views the nature of buying and selling. So that's why the Gemara wants to go through this issue just to clarify what the underlying assumptions are of the cases in the Mishnah. So because of that, we bring up Shmuel. Shmuel's case is like this. A guy takes something from a store So he walks into a craft store. These people are selling, you know, artistic mayim achronim dishes. So fine. So he wants to take a dish, and the price is set. It's not like that they're going to be arguing about the price. So he takes the dish to show his wife, see if she likes it, you know. So, okay. So as he takes it to look it over, something happens to it and it breaks. And it's an ones. It's not that he broke it. It's like, I don't know, whatever an ones would be considered an ones. You know, it gets blown out of his hand with the Rosh Hashanah Metzion. Whatever the case is, it wouldn't matter. He would still be chayiv. Now, why would he still be chayiv? Because apparently what Shmuel is saying is because he's considered to be, for all intents and purposes, a shoel. What defines the nature of a shoel? Kol hana'a shelo, right? I mean, if somebody is in a situation where he's the one who's benefiting and nobody else is benefiting from it. So that is putting yourself in the place of the owner. And therefore, even if it's an ones, you're going to be chayiv. Now, that's remarkable, because that would mean that what is Shmuel saying? He is saying that when somebody sells you something, he's doing you a great favor. And the hana is entirely yours. I mean, if it's mutual, so why is the hana entirely yours? I mean, it's basically, it's a deal, you know. So certainly it wouldn't be a shoel to be chayav on onasim. Maybe it'd be a shomer socher, that we'll see, but certainly not a shoel. So what Shmuel seems to be saying is that sales are hana'at lokeach. They're entirely for the benefit of the person who's doing the purchasing. So then, what's he going to do with the Mishnah? I mean, the Mishnah obviously doesn't hold that, because take a look at our Mishnah. It's not. Somebody says she'eni nene miYisrael. So he sells for less. He's not going to be nene. He sells for less, but he can't sell at regular market value. That's what it's saying. So he has to sell for less than market value. Now, I don't understand. If the idea over here would be that a sale is the doing a favor to the buyer, so then he's the seller, and he only ossered himself from being nene. So he's giving all the hana to the buyer, even though it's at the regular price. So why does it say he has to sell for, I don't understand. No, there we're talking about something that is, as they say in Hebrew, al hapanim. Al hapanim is the type of thing nobody wants to buy. Zvina de rumi al hape. Rumi al hape means it's flat on its face. So in other words, this guy, you know what he's selling? He's selling HP computers. Who the heck is crazy enough to buy an HP computer? So stock just fell 30 points in one day. So if that's the case, only Warren Buffett is stupid enough to buy into Hewlett Packard. But anyway, the idea of, listen, you're supposed to be able to get all kinds of information about life when you're learning Gemara. Remember, that's the whole Gemara. I mean, so there's nothing that's not Nogea. Okay, so now you got to know. If you were planning on buying HP stocks or an HP computer, you have today's Gemara. So what we're talking about is Azvina de Ramya al Ape. So this is in very low demand. Nobody's interested in buying it. So in that case, of course, if the guy is willing to buy from you in the Mishnah, so then you're being nene. Whew, thank God I found some idiot that ready to buy this, right? Okay, wait a minute. Now, look, the Ran points out, the Gemara's not stupid. I mean, obviously, if you're going to tell me that the Mishnah's talking about the Rami Alapi, anything that will explain why you would have to sell for less is going to be the opposite of the answer for why he has to buy for more. I mean, so you can't really come up with an answer like this unless you're going to adjust the case for each part of the Mishnah, which is a little bit ridiculous. I mean, it's going to have to come out that the point in the Gemara is, as the Ran explains, the point in the Gemara is basically to tell you that there are three different levels of conducting business. So you have hot items, and you have ala panim items, and you have mutually beneficial items where you're doing business and, you know, the buyer is happy, the seller is happy, and that's the way business is done. That's mutual. In the end, obviously, the Mishnah is going to be referring to mutual business. That's the only way to really deal with all of the different parts of the Mishnah. However, since the Gemara, where Shmuel actually defined these halachas in terms of Nezikin, didn't make that clear, And remember the klal. Divrei Torah ni'im b'makom echad ve'ashirim b'makom acher. Sometimes you find the pratim of a halacha only by knowing a completely different source. So what the Mishnah, what the Gemara is doing over here is pointing out that the Mishnah that is, has to be understood in a particular case, and Shmuel has to be understood in a different case. And that means that in any case where we're going to determine what the responsibility is in the, you know, the classic, you broke it, you bought it. Is that true? I mean, that's what Shmuel seems to be saying. It turns out that's not so posh. Okay, so, but the Gemara, let's watch the Gemara go through the steps. Ask the Gemara, but wait, if we're talking about Derami Alape, we're talking about an item that's Alapanim. So, Imkein Emeresha. The Resha says that he has to pay more than it's worth. I mean, if we're talking about an HP computer, even if he buys it at market value, it's only the seller that's going to be happy. He's not getting any hano himself, is he? So make up your mind. So if it's really alapanim, so then why does he have to pay more? He could buy it standard market price. Not to mention the fact that it doesn't help us in understanding the Seifa, because the Seifa, the Mishnah says, that if the guy answered B'nai Yisrael from getting hano from him, so it says that he has to buy for less because he can't give them hana, and he has to sell for more. That doesn't make sense either, because if the Mishnah is talking about a case of ala panim computers, so then he should be allowed to sell even at the regular market price, because the buyer is not going to be happy with his HP computer. He's not doing him any favors. So therefore, he's not being ma'ane him. So what's the problem? And yet the Mishnah says that he can't. Well, no, no, no. What are you talking about? The Seifa obviously is talking about Apple. What's the matter with you? The Seifa is talking about Apple, and the Resha is talking about HP. That's the difference. So the Seifa is a hot item, Bezvina Harifa, which, of course, is ridiculous because it's going to put us right back into the other problem, in which case, so then why does it say Lokeach B'Pachot? So then if the Seifa is talking about Apple, so why does it say that he has to buy at less? I mean, he should be allowed to buy even at the full value, because, I mean, the point is that he's the one that's being nana, not the person he's buying from. Yeah, I guess you're right. Ella, obviously, there's a third category, which anybody could have understood at the beginning, which is that the Mishnah is talking about a Zvina Mitzah. It's talking about a normal item. It's not a hot item. It's not an Nafal HaPonav item. And Shmuel is talking about a Zvina Harifa. That's the point. So maybe Asisk is still in there. I don't know. I mean, things change by the day, you know. But you can take your chances, especially on a Black Friday. Okay, now, Tanya Kavose de Shmuel. We have a brisa that actually shows that Shmuel is right in saying that you broke it, you bought it. And how is that? So here the idea is like this. A guy wants to send a gift to his potential in-laws, okay? Now, the problem is that these potential in-laws are not interested in being potential in-laws, maybe. So he figures if he sends them something nice and they accept it, maybe there's more of a chance that they're going to be his potential in-laws. Okay. So anyway, so he goes over to a storekeeper. He says, look, I really don't know if they're going to accept this gift from me, but I would love to send them these beautiful flowers for Shabbos. But they refuse to accept it. I'm going to give it back. Okay. The guy says, what are you, crazy? I'm not going to let you schlep her. No, no. You know, I'll pay you for the tovatana, I'll pay you for the fact that I got them to think that I'm a good guy because I was trying to send them flowers. That's also worth money. So I'll give you $5 for that. And then, and if they end up keeping it, then I'll pay you the full $50 for the arrangement. Okay. Interesting. What a deal. Okay. So he's lokeach kelim min ha'tagar, and he wants to send them to his potential father-in-law's home, lebeit chamiv. So he says to the guy, if they accept the flowers, so then I'll pay you the price. But if not, I'll pay you a certain amount, which was worth for me for the tovat hana'ah. Now, what happens if something breaks the gift on the way to the house? So if they were, and this is be'onis, not that it's my fault at all. So nensu b'halicha, then he would be chayev. Oh, wow. Why is he chayev? Ah, that's what Shmuel said. Because if you were taking them to check them out, and you could turn that into a buy, then all the hanah is yours. So then it's entirely the lokeach. This is exactly what Shmuel said. If you're on the way back to the store after they put you in your place and you have a couple of black eyes and so much carrying the flowers back to the store, so then you're putter. Because at that point, since it was an ones, you are called a nosei sachar. Why are you a nosei sachar? Because the point is that the shoel, because of kol hana'ah shelo, it's an understood mutual assumption that if you're going to do me the favor of lending me this, right? So you're lending me my lawnmower. So then at least I owe you to view myself as being paid for bringing it back. I mean, you did me the whole favor. So when I say, well, I was bringing it back, I was no longer, you said I can only have it till Monday, and now it's Tuesday, so I'm not a shoel anymore. Now I'm just a shomer chinam. So, you know, if it was stolen on the way, it's not my fault. Come on, man. I mean, so this is it. This is what you give the guy in exchange. I mean, yeah, the kind of friend some people have, yes. But in normal relationships, it's understood that the guy is accepting on himself, obviously, the responsibility to get it back at least as a shomer. Okay. That's the shomei ra'ah tachat tova. We know those kind of friends. Fine. So this is exactly what Shmuel said. So now here we had an interesting situation in which there was a guy, a safsira. Safsira is a middleman, right? So he takes merchandise, tries to sell it. If he sells it, then, and it's on consignment. If he sells it, so he gets a profit, pays for it. If not, he returns it. Okay. So he doesn't have to pay anything up front, but there's an agreed value. A jobber, yeah. Exactly. Thank you. So funny. I was thinking the whole day, what is that word for safsira in English? Couldn't come up with it. Thank you, Barnea. It was driving me crazy because I remember there's mamash a specific word. Wonderful. Anyway, so there was this safsira, a jobber, and he basically agreed with someone, okay, let me try selling your donkey. All right, so he's going all around. He's taking a donkey. He couldn't find anybody to buy the donkey. And behind the hadar, eat this hamra. And on the way back, the donkey had a heart attack and drops dead on him. And now what's going to be? Reb Nachman said he has to pay. So, Eitzvei Ravel Reb Nachman, what do you mean? It says beferish that if it's on the way back and he didn't succeed in his plan, so then he's considered to be a shomer socher. And a shomer socher is putter on heart attacks of donkeys. So why does he have to pay? Oh, Marley said, Reb Nachman, what's the matter with you? He's never on his way back. A jobber is always on his way to sell. If he's at the doorway to return the donkey and somebody says, hey, can I see that donkey? Believe me, he's very happy to sell. And he's advertising as he goes, your last chance, Black Friday deals on donkeys. So when is he going back? So therefore, it's always chazora is halacha. If you're talking about a jobber, he's always on his way. The ilum ashkach lezabuni. Suppose he finds a customer. Afilo above the beit, even he's right there on the door to return it. You think he's not going to sell it? Of course he's going to sell it. And therefore, my psak is the only psak. Now, we're ready once again for our very overworked Richie. Richie has made us a Black Friday deal. Go for it, Rich. Now, here's another beautiful example of the fundamental usage of a word that ends up being proven from the way that the Torah has defined things. Even those we saw before, we will ignore the Torah's definition. We're going to bring a raya from Yiludin, Yoladin. We're going to actually look only at the common usage. But, as I've said, all of these last Mishnayos are there to show us how it is that certain classic usages of words and the mocker of the word in the Torah actually comes to define the way people will view of words. Let's say somebody says, I don't want to have any benefit, it's a konam, from arelim. Now, what does that mean? He does not really mean arelim. He means Jews. So he is mutter, even if a Jew is an Orel. He's not called an Orel, he's called a Jew. And he's usher on an Ovid Kachavim, even if the Ovid Kachavim is Nimol. So it's not that this guy wants a certificate from anybody that shows him, hello, you can have anov from me. That's not the point. Either you're Jewish or you're not Jewish. He does not need a Moyle's report. And if he says that I will not be nene from mulim, then the opposite is true. He's usher, even if a Yisrael is an oral, is usher, because Yisrael are not, are called mulim, even if they're not. And he's usher, b'ma'orla Yisrael, and he's mutter b'mule akum, because the concept of orla is not foreskins. That's not the point. Unless you're in Finland and you need a heksher for the grape juice, you have to make sure that there's no foreskins in it, and it's kosher. This was a big problem that we had over there in Finland. I know it's a weird kind of place. But anyway, somebody actually sent a copy of the heksher, I think, last time we spoke about it, right? It was a heksher on Shvius and Orla, so they had translated. It's guaranteed not to have any foreskins in the grape juice. Amazing. Anyway, so where do we see this in the... It's a riot, but it's really happened. Anyway, so where do we see this? Shenemar ki chol ha-goyim arelim. Goyim are by definition called arelim. V'chol beit Yisrael are arle leiv. So they are not pure in the way that their hearts respond. And it also says, v'haya ha-plishti ha-arel ha-zeh. So what are we talking about? How does David HaMelech know that Goliath is an Orel? I mean, like, where does he come up with that? But you see that the whole point is the Arelut. And we find that it also says, just in case you feel that that is not considered to be, normally a person is not born, maybe he was born Nimol or something, but when you're talking about that you're not going to think, but when you're talking about the whole nation of the Plishtim, can you call them all Arelim? Yes, because it says, Pen tismachna benot Plishtim, pen talozna benot Arelim. So you see that we're referring to the entire nation of the Plishtim as Arelim. Not because we're making an assumption about the likelihood that one Plishti or another is an Oral or that it's Noilat Nimo. Fine. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah says, look, the idea is that the Orla, you're not going down all to the basis of it, because the way you're looking at it is that this is just a reference to Brit, so that if someone is part of the Brit on Torah and so on, so he's called Nimo. And if he's not, he's called Orel. But you don't understand that there is a real physical basis to this. It's not just that we use the word in that way, says Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, because the Orla itself is disgusting. This is like what we found by Shechem. So if the Bnei Yisrael tell Shechem that, look, we don't have anything to do with people that are Arelim, they were referring to really being Arelim. Obviously, that was the whole point, right? They were saying, no, you got to cut off those foreskins or we don't have anything to do with you. Boy, these are weirdos. But whatever. But they took it seriously. And they understood that it was a reference to a foreskin. So you can't just jump to the conclusion that it's just a strange way of referring to the bris. It is disgusting. It's ma'usa. And that's why, you see, we call the goyim arelim. Because since it's ma'us, then the idea of kol ha-goyim arelim is a description of the mius of being free in the world without any kind of humanity, no connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, no awareness of Yichud Hashem, of the whole point of your mind and your consciousness, like you're an animal. So that's the point of the Me'isa of Arla, is the animalism. Rabbi Yishmael Omer, and Mila itself is tremendously chashuv, because it isn't just a way of referring to the bris on Torah. Because the whole Torah is the Rambam, I mean, just quoting the Gemara really, the entire Torah only has 3 britot. And Mila has 13 britot. And the Rambam lists every one of those 13 britot in the halacha. So it's, I mean, we're not just stomp throwing around psukim. Each one of those gedorim have something to do with the nature of Mila. Rabbi Yossi Omer, Gedola Mila, Shedocha et HaShabbat Chamura. Take a look how great Mila is. Shabbos is so choshev to us. Keneged kol haTorah kula. And yet, when it comes to Bris Mila, Bzdoicha Shabbos. Rabbi Yoshua ben Korcha Omer, you want to see how choshev Mila is? Gedola Mila, Shalonit Lala Lemosha Tzadik Alea Afilu Melosha A. Moshe was such a tzaddik. Here's the Rambam's marker. Moshe was such a tzaddik. Tzaddik of Moshe Rabbeinu. We don't refer to him as tzaddik anywhere in the Torah. So the idea of Moshe Rabbeinu, who was a tremendous tzaddik, of course, we use the Lashon of tzaddik specifically here because it's Nogea Mila. That's the remez to tzaddik. But even for 1 minute, Melosha'a, Moshe Rabbeinu wasn't let off the hook for a moment. Rebbe, we'll see in a moment, of course, what that's referring to, the Maaser when he came to Mitzrayim and so on. Rebbe Nechemiah Omer, Gedola Mila Shedocha Tanigaim. Take a look how choshev Mila is, that we ignore the din of Negat Saras. Yishomer B'Negat Saras. Well, not if it's Nogea Mila. And if a foreskin has a Saras on it, so then you ignore the Saras completely. Rebbe Omer, Gedola Mila, Shekola Mitzvot Shas Avram Avinu. You know, Avram Avinu was Bekayim Kol HaTorah Kula. And nonetheless, HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells him, when it comes to the Mila, Yitalech Lefanai Ve'yetamim. And as the Medrash says, he was totally shocked. What do you mean Ve'yetamim? My whole life, I thought everything that I'm doing is to do that. No, says HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you don't have a Mila. Then you're not Tamim. Dovra Acher Gedola Mila. Because he'll malei he lo barak adosh baruch et olomo. It's the only point of creation. Shenema koma Hashemim lo briti yom avalai lo chukot shamayim v'aretz lo samti. So you see that these may be based on the simple level of the difference between the way we refer to Goyim and refer to Yisrael, but it really is deeply connected to the fact of Orla and the fact of Mila. This is very important for Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah to establish, because nowadays that point has been lost, completely lost. People talk about Mila as if it is the word bris. He has a bris. They're embarrassed to talk about what Mila is, or they'll never talk about Orla as if it's really Orla. And so Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, if that is the case, then you're going to end up forgetting the entire nature of what we're talking about, which is specifically why we're going to speak even about the issue of Tzaras. That seems like a very loose kind of thing, but it's the only raya that has to do with the foreskin itself, you see, so that the Tzaras is an issue. If there's Tzaras bedavka in the actual foreskin, you'll still nonetheless, what do you have to get so graphic for? That's the point. Okay, now, you said, Rabbi Shimon Korcha Omer, Gedola Mila, Shekol Zechiyot Shesa Moshe Rabbeinu, Lo Amdu Lo Kishenitrashel Min HaMila, Shenemar, Vayivgesheu Hashem, Vayivakesh HaMito, HaKadosh Baruch Hu sees him and wants to kill him. Omar, Rabbi Chas V'Shalom, Shemoshe Rabbeinu, Nitrashel Min HaMila, how can you even think such a thing? You really think that Moshe Rabbeinu would in any way be makel about giving Mila? That's crazy. Elakachamar, you have to understand what was going on over there. HaKadosh Baruch Hu told him to go to Mitzrayim. And he just had a baby. So he says to himself, so what do I do? I don't know what to do. If I'm going to first do the Mila and then leave to Mitzrayim, so then that's going to make a real sakana to the child. Because I can't travel with him when he is going through this recovery. So you see that for 3 days, there's going to be pain from the Mila, and therefore, if this is what they took advantage of, by the way, this is an interesting sugya, because most of the Rishonim learn that there's not more pain on the third day, which is clear from the Gemara Shabbos, really. It's just that after 3 days of pain, the person is nechalash. But it's not that the pain is getting worse, so that's like a common misconception, but there are a couple of Rishonim that actually take it kipshute and beheyotam koavim in the Pirush on Chumash, that's when their pain was worse. That's what it's mashma, even though it doesn't seem that way from the Gemara. So therefore, he couldn't go. It's a sakana. Should I wait? the 3 days? How can I wait the 3 days? HaKadosh Baruch Hu told me to go and to be Matzu Yisroel from Mitzrayim, so I'm gonna wait for 3 days. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu Amar Lelechshuv Mitzrayim, so I have to leave. This is a mitzvah hashah. So therefore, I better take him and be malim after I arrive. So I understand. So then what did he do wrong? So mipnei ma ne'enash Moshe, mipnei shenitasek b'malon techila. Speaking about Mila, he went to the Malon. So that is a no-no. What's he sitting over there? What? He's got to get settled in his hotel room and so on. What's the big deal? You'll do the Mila, and you're close enough now to Mitzrayim that you're not going to be in any kind of problem with the child. So you'll go ahead. Shenemar v'yi baderach b'malon. And that's why it's stressed. Why do you think it's stressed b'malon? But HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Dafka, because he was in a hotel? And that's why, Vayivgishev Hashem, Vayivakesh Amito, what does that have to do with the hotel? So you see from the pasuk that it has to do with the hotel. You wouldn't think there's a connection between hotels and Mila, would you? Like, Bimalon, Shanu, Lanim, Alayla, with the Givata Arelut, or anything like that. Nah, it's just coincidence. Anyway, as Reb Shimon ben Gamliel says, Reb Shimon ben Gamliel Omer, nah, you got the whole thing wrong. Moshe Rabbeinu wasn't in any danger. When it says Vayivakesh Amito, it means the baby was going to be killed. Lola Moshe Rabbeinu bikesh satan larog, elolotot tinok. It was that he was bringing a child. You see that Tzipora says, ki chatan damim atali. Who is the chatan? Habachur chatan bar mitzvah, or hachatan ha-rachanimol. Okay, so who's the chatan? The rachanimol is the chatan. Say, or a mikorui chatan. It's the one of the hour, the person that's in the focus over here, and that's the tinok. Okie doke. We shall continue with the details of the attack on either Moshe Rabbeinu or Moshe Rabbeinu's child. So what do you say? How did we get from the Dorim to Bris Mila? Okay. We'll have to keep looking tomorrow.